This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris. Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Karen, I almost did that hilarious thing. I love when comedians do it where I introduce myself, except I say your name, and then this you is... follow suit and say my name. Isn't that fun when comics do that?
It is so hilarious, and it really kicks you off.
Yeah, it lets people know, yeah, that they're entering some backwards world.
Get ready. Open your mind. Yeah. Because this is what this is.
I'm kidding, of course. I don't like that. I also don't like when someone's doing a selfie video and then they turn and go, oh, hello, I didn't see you there. That's still very popular.
And you say no, thank you?
Yeah, I say, no, I don't see you there. And I slam my computer shut and shoot loose papers off of my desk.
Nice.
That I only keep stacked on the desk for that purpose.
For
frustration.
Effect.
Yeah.
In your inbox for
yeah,
effect?
No, yeah, no one's even watching. Yeah, it's like that Stephen J. Connell opening to 80s shows.
Yes, when
papers
it goes
fly,
from
and then
real
it,
paper, typewriter paper, to flying cartoon paper.
Into a logo. And I'm going to say that's not the first time I've referenced that.
No, you love that.
I'm
you
all
love that.
Out of, and we're going to, our guest today, you're not going to believe the story that I told on his podcast. I'll give you one guess what it was about.
Was it about feline AIDS, for God's
God
sake?
God damn it. That's what I did on Eugene's podcast. I talked about that damn cat. The episode Aww. Even is called This Darn Cat. He knew preemptively that I would overtell that story for years to come because that was a long time ago.
Yeah,
but
we love it.
We've got them all set up. We're doing it over Zoom. Back then when I did his podcast, we had to recruit a local recording station in Missoula, Montana. There was like all these people involved. It was very professional. But that's, we didn't want to do that to Eugene today. So we kept it very unprofessional.
He is one of the great professionals of our time.
I know. That's why I thought I'd mix it up for him. Remind him yeah. what it used to be like before he
nice.
Was a consummate professional.
He plays clubs and colleges
so
all
many
over this
colleges.
Great country.
Yeah. Ivy League.
If you watch Bob's Burgers, you will recognize his voice, mm-hmm. and you're going to be very excited
yes.
for our guest today. It is, in fact, Eugene Merman.
Hello.
Yay.
He
hello.
Did it. He said it.
You promised to say hello when we announced your name, and you followed through with that promise.
Yes. I thought it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Not lie. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. Follow your gut.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let them know that I'm here.
Yeah. It's real.
Yeah.
How are you, Eugene?
Yeah. Doing okay.
Are you a person, Eugene, that lives in Los Angeles, or do you live in New York City?
Great choices. Live in not neither. I'm a person who lives in Massachusetts.
Boston or Salem?
I live underneath, 1,000 meters underneath the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem. I live in the Boston area.
And you are from there. You moved there as a child, correct?
I moved there. Yes, I moved to Lexington, Massachusetts as a child from the former Soviet Union. We fled. Then I lived in New York for a very long time. And a few years ago, moved back to the Boston area.
How old were you when you left USSR?
I was 4.
Do you remember? This might sound like a dumb question, but I have one distinct memory from where I was born in Monterey. I'm not bragging. It's a nice town.
I was only
Great aquarium.
Only there till I was 2, but I do have one vivid memory. Do you have any memories?
I essentially don't have any memories. I think I remember the smell of blackcurrant. I think that's the only thing that had this weird familiarity, and then it turns out there were bushes that were near a little place we had on a pond.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Yeah.
And have you ever been back?
I have not. I've been curious, but then over the decades, as it became more and more authoritarian, it became less scarier prospect.
Because I understand that fully.
I got to go to, and I don't know what the correct term would be, because I went there in 1987 in high school on it was called Moscow, Poland, and the West. It was like a tour that we got to go on for school. And so it was behind the Iron Curtain. Technically, it was right before the wall came down and everything. Wow. And it was unbelievable. It was one of my favorite things of my life. And it was so fascinating. And the thing I've always talked about, which is so me, is my favorite thing about it was people had card tables set up on the sidewalk with little glasses that would look like a small orange juice if you ordered it in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they were half filled with Coke. And so you'd go up and pay a couple rubles and you stand there and drink your Coke and give them the glass back. And that was basically, that was one of the many things you could do on the streets.
A country surviving off of basically lemonade stands.
Entirely. And then there were actually automated vodka dispensers that you could go up and do the same thing. And then the same glass stayed in it and you put it in soda machine, whatever, but it would just pour out a certain amount of vodka, stood there, take your shot, put it back, and it would do a rinse of
It would rinse it, because it sounds is it that germs only came to the Soviet Union in the mid-90s?
They were all collected on one glass.
Yeah.
And then, no, but it was, but then we also stayed in places that were clearly at one time these unbelievable, gorgeous hotels. Mm-hmm. And now we all just got to be in there. It was our rooms were there were 30-foot ceilings and these arched windows. And it was really amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, I liked it.
So when you and your parents fled, I assume you fled with your parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it was
sure.
It was really their idea. I knew so little of the world at that time. But yes, my parents and my brother and I all left together.
And was Massachusetts just an arbitrary choice, or what was the process?
No, I think that the process was, I think that we might have had friends in this area, and there was maybe jobs in tech. This was in, 1979. So I think it was just and maybe there was even Jewish organizations helping us relocate. And for whatever reason, it was this area. I think it had to do with the potential of work.
Wow.
That's great. Is that what your dad did or your mom did?
Both of
for
them
a living
worked
already?
In programming and math. Yeah. It's one of the staples of Russian refugees.
Are you good at math? Because I am not.
I would describe myself as not great at math. Not meaning I'm fine, but I'm not like, I can't do math to like solve problems. Like,
yeah.
If I, like, my dad could tell you if, like, a bridge could hold a car, and I can't do that. I could tell you if, like, you have, like, 80 apples and you added 40 apples.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can too.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Well, so great. I'm, like, more in the, like, I can, like, calculate almost unlimited numbers of apples, but not, like, tension of, like, the strength of various materials. Like, well, that's, I'm out.
These guys working on this bridge, they're going to get hungry and want apples.
Yeah,
exactly. And if you're, they're like, we have 80, and then another guy's like, I have 40. I'm like, oh, it sounds like you guys have 120 apples. So
and then the three bridge.
Of you are fine.
Enjoy your lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the bridge collapses because they weren't paying attention to that math.
Exactly.
Is your dad funny? Because I always thought it's maybe two different brains that are good at math.
I think of comedy as a I do think actually comedy and math are sort of very related, because I think of, like, you know, comedy is figuring out sort of like this little problem and then like tweaking it in a way where you make a joke. So it is in a certain sense, like kind of formulas, but not math formulas.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe
emotional,
it's just
emotional formulas.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Those don't intimidate me like numbers do.
Yeah.
Maybe I am good at a form of numberless math.
Yeah. Called comedy.
Comedy.
Trial and error. Like science, you get on stage, you try stuff.
Yeah.
That's not as good a punchline as this other thing.
You science. Edit by adding or subtracting words.
Yeah.
Math.
At a particular velocity and speed.
Well, on a train leaving somewhere.
Exactly.
So how did you get into stand-up?
I loved stand-up as a kid. Like listening to like Emo Phillips and Bobcat Goldthwait and watching Robin Williams' like A Night at the Met. And now, like, in hindsight, I'm like, oh, I got like 30% of it. you know, I loved it. And then I think at some point in high school, I was like, oh my God, that's a type of job. Like,
yeah,
not everyone like works with computers. So there's all sorts of things, and, you know, started doing more like theater and video and stuff. And then, you know, at the end of high school, essentially like the summer before college, tried stand up and it like went deceptively well. And then like my second time, as I think a lot of people, like, you bomb really hard.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yes, this is a very long process.
Yeah.
So I was still like, it seemed so fun. And so then, you know, I basically listened to so much stand up growing up and then started doing it and then really loved it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and comedy in general, like writing funny things and doing silly stuff, and I don't know.
Yeah, I've always thought that you do much more than stand up. In my experience,
now in hindsight, yes. At 18, I don't know.
Well, I feel like I may have met you before. Could this be right? I feel like I may have met you before, either before you started stand up or right when you started.
Well, meaning I started when I was 18, so I find I think like that's not likely. Like, meaning I think we met probably in New York, though.
Mm-hmm.
Though depending on when, like, you know, I moved to New York in 2000, and I did it throughout. You know, I did stand up throughout college, and, you know, then for a few years in Boston before moving to New York, and we probably met in the early-ish 2000s.
Yes, maybe that was just an assumption, because I feel like when I first met you, you didn't say anything. But then looking back, it's like if I was with David Cross or I was with somebody that was your hero,
right,
that maybe you just had that kind of like, maybe you were the person that was running the room, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I could have easily been quiet. I did do a show. Oh, I did a show and invite them up at Rafifi starting in the early 2000s. And like I had met David through Brendan Small in Boston. Mm-hmm. And so it's very possible that like, I mean, it's likely that I met you with David, and yes, that I was quiet or something. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I think I had an idea of what New York comics were like in my mind. And then I just remember, you being very quiet and kind of like, almost like, keep your eye on that guy. I don't know what that guy's doing. And so then, I over the years watching your career has been very delightful to me, because I was like, and I'm sure I was also rude, because that was always my approach.
Don't think that was the case, but who knows? I was probably quiet and uncomfortable in the world.
Sure.
That's very likely.
I think I was rude and uncomfortable in the world, but it was that thing of going from, nobody, especially at the time, had respect for LA comics. You didn't want to be an LA comic. So going to New York, I had that kind of thing of this is the place where you have to have good sets. And I was having absolutely terrible sets everywhere I went, because I was truly an LA comic in that way, where nothing was very punchy. Mm-hmm. It was all very self-referential and I guess kind of sucked in a lot of ways. So I think I just had that defense up of I'm not bad, you're bad.
Right. And I also, who knows, depending on the night or what it was, sometimes you'd try stuff that would be great. And then sometimes it'd be that's very strange and confusing, Yes. So I feel when I was in, there was some people who went through a world in stand-up where you are an opener and then you're a middler and then you're a headliner and maybe you're hosting stuff that's a lot of tourists. But I always found it much easier to sort of start my own show with friends and have and sort of build an audience for the thing that I'm trying to do. And so I think as a result, you would have these rooms where you could actually then try sort of odd stuff, and the stuff that worked would then work in wherever across the country, and the stuff that didn't, you just it wasn't so bad. You could kind of bomb with grace, but as a result try a lot of different stuff.
Yes, as opposed to if you were at Caroline's at 10 o'clock at night and then you're just I shouldn't be a comedian, this is
right,
my
right.
world
you, well you also
apart.
Yeah, then have to be probably and I think there was probably a world of very aggressive New York comics and then a world of sort of nerdy gentle comedy, or weird and absurd, and again you're figuring stuff out, and then eventually a lot of stuff blurs together and it's all the things that were sort of that world of are now TV shows and people with movies and stuff.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah. I'm someone that I started in Austin, and there was pretty quickly you got work featuring at different clubs run by Rich Miller. And when I moved to LA, you were one of the first comics that I saw where clearly you had built your own following and had your own thing going on. And to me, that the going name for it was alternative comedy back then.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I'm glad that I moved here, because I felt uneasy and probably also was very quiet around everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But what a relief to me to see that you were doing that and you didn't have to just go and feature on the road and struggle in front of flyover audiences,
Right. And also I think a lot of it was that it was also just a more it was for me, it was the better way to become a professional comedian. It wasn't I was killing as, a feature in random places and then did it was more that this was the way to build an actual following. And I put out an album in the very early 2000s where other people in my position maybe wouldn't, but it was that's what I had access to. You can't put yourself on television, but without a threat, but you can release a record, and now it's probably that much easier, though that much more saturated.
When I met you, you had a following, a grassroots following that you created, and especially from my perspective, people knew you in the audience. That just blew my mind. And we were young, we were children.
Yeah.
So good job from
Thank
the
you.
Beginning.
I just wanted to get you here to say good job on that in the early 2000s.
Yeah, your
thank
early
you so
career.
Much. Thank you. Thank you. It was,
you did it correctly. And I saw the early signs that you were doing it correctly. So again, congratulations to you 20 years ago.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
And what are you doing these days, Eugene? What's your deal now?
We know you're doing Bob's Burgers. Me and my friend Julie Smith, who we did our comedy festival together and a bunch of stuff. We're working on starting like a small comedy label. And I have a 5-year-old son.
That's terrific.
Yeah. So a lot of time is spent, you know, with him.
Sure. Good.
Yeah. Like, and he, I feed him and I
pat him on the head.
And
stuff
I say,
like that.
Great job. Yesterday I got him a booster. A COVID booster shot. So all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
I'm up
stuff.
To, yeah, exactly. It's a mix of dad stuff and Bob's and then recording random stuff and sort of slowly getting back into stand up as the pandemic is here forever. So, at first I was like, oh, when things get better. And now it's like, well, I had COVID in January. It was asymptomatic, but that was fine, I guess, for me.
The best version.
Yeah. So like I'm now slowly starting to do stand up, I guess.
I'm looking at it as just go on the road to celebrate these little vacations between variants.
Yeah. Yes.
And that'll be a nice, I mean, that'll be okay, right?
I think did like a benefit, you know, I don't know, like a thing where I just like did a small thing a month or two ago and I had a mask on most of the time and a bunch of people there got COVID. I had it and didn't happen to get it. So it's like, go to stuff, but maybe stay masked and not near too many people. But I don't know. Yeah. I think that's, you know, but
yeah,
I think here in Massachusetts, also a lot of people are, you know, vaccinated and
sure.
I don't know. Yeah. Like now most of the people I know having COVID, it's not like, great, but it's not the like terror that it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So scary at the beginning.
Did you travel here for the Bob's Burgers movie?
I did. I was there. Yeah, last week for the premiere. It was my first premiere. It was really fun. Yeah.
First ever.
I mean, like on that scale, like I've gone, like I had a documentary and went to the premiere of that. But like in terms of like a street is blocked off and there's a red carpet and a ton of press and like, you know, photographers and all this stuff, like.
People call yelling Gene at you.
Yes, that I experience occasionally. but yeah, it was fun, and it was also really great to see everybody. And yeah, the premiere was fun.
Haven't seen any of these. You've been recording then there at your house.
Yeah, I record. At home mostly. We about a month and a half ago had gone out for WonderCon, and so I saw for the first time some of the people, and then some of the cast that's like here, or Lauren Bouchard who comes to Massachusetts because he's from here. So like some of the people I've seen, but then others I hadn't seen, you know, in a few years. So it was really really nice.
And people are loving that movie, right? I see people on Twitter.
I think people are enjoying it. We'll find
they
out.
They like it.
Yeah.
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 I've seen clips that I like.
Yes. Yes. I think it's very funny. I think it's very sweet. You know, I feel like Lauren and Nora and everybody like do such a good job of like these kind of very sweet, funny, quirky stories.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the show. So I feel like the movie is, and also of the songs.
Very
like
good.
The songs
very
are
catchy.
Just so brilliant. They really are.
Yeah.
It's so good. When you said Julie Smith, though, it reminded me, I just realized the last time I actually saw you in real life was when I did your comedy festival at the Bell House. Mm-hmm. I remember watching, the lineup was insane. The audience was great. And I was just like, I had that voice in my head that was just like, and you're going to get out there and eat it. And I'm like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. I swear to God. It was like that thing of like, don't eat it. Just don't do it.
It's important to have that voice always in your head. I know I have it.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
even sometimes the voice will say, I wonder what it would feel like to stop doing well right now and consciously eat it. And then I do it. And I'm
and
like,
how does
oh,
it
yeah.
feel? Is it fulfilling?
Terrible. I forgot. Terrible. I forgot that it always feels
you
terrible.
You just needed the reminder that eating it sucks.
I will do it. My brain is a terrible thing that I can't control.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Bell House is synonymous with your name, actually. I know nothing of it except you had a show there.
Yeah. We did our festival there and then a show at Union Hall for a long time. It's a wonderful, really fun venue. And I think like now, like, there's lots of shows. People have recorded specials there. And, you know, it's a great space.
It's great.
Nope. I forget about all them. That's Merman's house. And it's one of those dad movies that my dad made me watch over and over. No, I loved it. Fletch, the first Fletch and like Caddyshack. But do you know much about this Fletch that's coming out or when it comes out?
I mean, in the sense that I'm in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know it's real.
So I don't know the details of like when it comes out or anything, but yeah. I know that I filmed it last summer.
Okay.
And I know that it's coming out and that, you know, it'll be funny. And I think it'll be, I'm very excited to see it.
Are you a character that was maybe based on one from the original movie?
I don't know. No, I don't. It's not. I think the tone of it is much more like the tone of the novels, as I understand it, from the 70s. Yeah. So it's not a remake of the movies. It's like actually like an adaptation of the original books from the
70s. I'm always someone, that either doesn't know or forgets about the existence of books and how they brought me a lot of movies.
There's, I think, a lot of books, and I believe it is based on the book Confess Fletch.
I am going to go ahead and admit that I didn't know there was a series of Fletch books.
Yeah, that's I found out when I was doing the movie. I don't think like a lot of people are finding out right now that in the 70s there was a series of Fletch books.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I don't think anyone like read them in high school or anything. It doesn't seem to be well known. Although I have to say Fletch was a movie that came out right when I think I was 12 when it came out or so. So it was one of those movies that we had memorized and said the lines to to each other constantly or whatever.
I
do remember seeing that in the credits. It was like based on the book by the author. I can't remember.
Okay.
So that's the only reason I knew is because I just loved that every frame of that movie. I think it's great. And also it's starring John Hamm, right?
Yeah.
He's playing Fletch.
Yes.
That's it is great. A comedy. He is funny in it though, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's not a gritty reboot.
No, I would not.
It's like the new Batman. It's like, it's just Hamm, like every scene he just murders someone.
Yeah.
In self-defense. No, it's a very funny. It's directed by the Greg who did Superbad. So it's this very funny.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see that. Was it really fun to be in that movie?
It was really fun. You know, I haven't done a ton of movies and that was sort of it and it was really fun and they were really nice and it was fun on set and
you're going to have to dust off your premiere suit.
Yes, exactly. I'll have to, for whatever.
Get ready for another carpet. Get used to it.
Yes, the new me.
You get really big lips and lip injections.
Yeah,
and
just
I will. I will get like butt implants and shoulder spikes or whatever people do. I'll figure it out.
Get them all.
Shoulder spike implants.
I'll consult with, the stylists in the Boston area.
The Velveeta Room, the place I started at in Austin, next door was a burger place called Casino El Camino. And a lot of the employees there were from the Jim Rose circus sideshow thing. And there was a guy there with it. It was the first time I'd seen implants under, like, I guess
they were like these little horns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Embedded, I guess, screwed into the bone of his skull.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, the skin was stretched over it, like taut. And I'm like, if you ever bump the horns getting out of your car, it horrified me just because I kept thinking of the accidents or bumping them, that tight skin. I mean, this was a very clinical, disgusting thing for me to talk about, but I was obsessed with how dangerous it seems to have spiky implants. So do not get them in your shoulders.
Don't even joke.
Yeah. And if you do. No, I didn't mean like, I guess it sounded like I was going to do surgical implants.
Right. I assumed you'd go through surgery and then get it all removed the day after the premiere.
Yeah.
The butt implants and everything.
Yep.
The premiere's over. Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I think I saw that guy there because I've seen that in my life around twice. And I feel like it's either there. Yeah, because I remember that place.
I wonder if that's, you know, like people get their tattoos removed after a while. I wonder if like you get two horns implanted in your head and then like 13 years later, you're kind of like, I don't know if I'm really this person anymore.
Probably right around the same time you're passing the bar.
Yeah.
It turns out you're a talented lawyer.
You're like a very good lawyer. You just at 20 were like, I'm a scary little monster. Yeah. And then,
Why is he always wearing a fedora to court?
Yeah, exactly. To hide his horns.
Or a very large wig, like a top.
Like one of those British like wigs.
Powdered wig, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The British barristers wear.
He insists upon bringing his own powdered wig to court. Hey, look, I want to do this the right way, he says, hiding his horns.
I really want there to be a modern day lawyer that, without explaining it to people, just wears a wig like that. I want it to be true. Just for, you know,
S's normal, and G's?
Yeah, just for litigation. Just for, for a hit and run accident, anything. Powdered wig. You know what? I'm going to start wearing one.
Do it.
Thanks, guys.
I came here
for support.
Wait for winter, though, because it will warm you up pretty good.
I think
summer's not great
for a powdered
wig. Well,
that's the purpose of the powder. Sure, you're sweaty and disgusting under that wig, but the powder keeps you fresh. Because it's medicated.
Boom. Yeah.
Wait, can we go back to Fletch for one second?
Yeah, let's do. Let's get me out of this whole wig thing. I'm sorry.
We're back in.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's funny. So Greg Mottola directed it, who did Superbad, and it's a very funny, and Ham is great as Fletch.
Did you ever do any, like, did anything ever happen on set? Like, did you forget your lines or... did you have to shoot?
So originally I was worried that I would have to do a Boston accent. But I had like, as written, there were only like two lines or so. And I was like, do I have to do the, because it's originally I think was cast as that. Because really John Hamm and Greg had asked me if I wanted to do, like, they were like, here's some role. Do you want to do this? We're shooting in Boston. And it sounded fun. And so I agreed. And then when I saw it, I was like, I wonder if I have to do this Boston accent for these two lines.
Are you a cop in it?
No, I'm a security guard.
because I would assume any cop in Boston, you have to have that accent.
I think they had enough. So like when I got there, they were like, we have plenty of people who are local who have an actual Boston accent, so you don't have to like pretend. Which is great, because it's like one thing to try to get like one or two lines, but to improvise in an accent that I don't really do. Would be its own level of effort.
Which is funny because you're
from Massachusetts. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like I can't probably say a word or two, but like have a conversation is different. So it's like a lot of improv and it was pretty fun. I haven't seen it yet, but I saw somebody last week who said they saw it and that it was funny and that.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see it.
I am too. Have you guys seen, not to change the subject to something that involves none of us, but the new Kids in the Hall?
No, I really want to see it.
It is. I texted you, Karen, today, like you didn't have better things to do. Hey, 1 p.m., watch all of Kids in the Hall and be sure to just be in your underpants like me. They really went for it. I'll just say that. And I thought maybe they wouldn't get away with certain things, but it's so well done and they are so good that it is, I highly recommend it.
It's great. No, I watched it the second that I heard that it was on, I was just like, this can't be real. And then I just binged the entire thing. I was thrilled.
They are funnier than ever. And I don't know if they've been practicing with acting. They're so good.
Well, they've all been acting. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think they've all stayed in practice.
Yeah, I suppose.
Kept it warm.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to watch it.
I hosted some music festival, and I do want to ask you about that, Eugene, because I know you've opened for a lot of bands. But we went to Calgary. It was like a folk music festival, and you just had to talk in between these acts as they were setting up. It was actually, and no one was listening, but it was me and another comic, Derek Seguin, I think, and then Kevin McDonald was there, and he was so nervous. He acted like he just had moved to Saskatchewan and gotten married, and he didn't do showbiz stuff anymore. That's why I was so happy to see how funny he was, because...
Oh, he's so funny.
He was worried that he would get on stage and no one would know him, and the minute he got on stage, the whole crowd freaked out. I mean, we were... Yeah. And he's like, oh, what a relief. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
He was so humble. And it's like he didn't even know. I was just staring at him, so excited to have met him. They were just really important to me in the early 90s, watching them over and over and over. Yeah. So anyway.
He actually was one of the people, the Odd Block Festival that they used to do in, Winnipeg.
Yeah, Winnipeg,
And their first night, they had a kind of like all the comics can go and hang out in the lobby of the main theater that they have it in. And he was there and I was freaking out. It was like, it might as well have been fucking Rob Lowe or I don't know, somebody... That's the only other celebrity I can think of. But I like at one
two.
Point.
Yeah, I would have said Rob Lowe too.
Those are the two that matter to me most. But I think I was with like Michelle Buteau or something or other, like, go say hi. And I'm like, no. Like I was acting so weird. But it was that thing to me of like, those guys were, I loved that show. And it was at this time where I'd like flunked out of college. There was nothing going on. I hadn't started stand up. And it was. It truly was like the idea that he would think people wouldn't recognize him in Canada is hilarious.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And then it was just to see 13,000 people on this outdoor, this island. It was the middle of the day. It was a terrible gig. And that's why he was nervous.
Yeah.
No
offense. He was right to be like, this isn't a good thing to do. The part where he was wrong is that people adore him and he's very, very funny.
And the part where he's right, he's like, I'm supposed to do stand-up? I don't do that.
Yeah, I think like over the years, I've done sort of things at music stuff, I have shrunk, like now I'm like, oh, you like, I think after the first time that someone was like, and you can go as they're setting stuff up. And then it turns out like, you can't possibly perform as stuff is being set up. So you have to say like, no, I can do a set beforehand or after, but I can't do it during. It's not, it's just genuinely not possible. Like you can't tell a joke and someone is like trying the sound of a cymbal and then like of a kick drum and then there's a guitar. Yeah. Like it's not feasible. But it takes having terrible experiences to go like, oh, these are the things that that you should, and they don't know. They're like, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And the answer is it will not be fun.
Yeah. always, you're always tricked into it by, because at this festival, there was, of course, a comedy tent with 12 people sitting in the grass.
Right.
But then later, and then there's just this other thing where you kill time as roadies drape cable over your shoulder.
right. And so, I think you have to, like, now I know that if someone asks the thing, I'm like, I'll totally do, like, this version of it, but like, I'll do a set before a band, but there can't be, like, someone tuning up instruments.
Yeah.
And you also can't do, like, a half hour, like, you have to, in a row. Like, it has to be, you know, unless I guess it's, like, you're both, like, draws or something like that. Like, if you're splitting the bill as opposed to, like, opening for some huge band.
Do you have any nightmare stories from doing gigs like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what's funny is like it's like the stories where it's like, and it went shockingly well.
Yeah.
Is like the part that like is in a sense amazing. Like I certainly have like I did a tour in Florida with Modest Mouse where I did maybe 12 shows. And you could imagine that some like were very hard, but the funnier part is almost like a few were great. Like, but it's true that there was one maybe in Miami that was like, it was like so hot and people couldn't hear me. And there was a woman in the front or or a kid, like I forget, like somewhere between probably like around 18 or 20. And she was like trying to get my attention. And like, it was so distracting and everyone was yelling. And then I was like, and then finally it became clear that like people didn't realize that there's like a schedule. So like if I get off stage, the band doesn't go on any faster. And then she also tried to convey sort of basically an Ayn Randian philosophy of self-interest that I was like, are you describing Ayn Rand? She's like, I've never heard of her. I just like act in a self-interested, selfish way.
This is while you were on stage?
Yes. It was like, this is what I mean. It was like people distracting you with complicated, tedious concepts.
Oh my God.
And like the problem is also like you can't even like make fun of, like it's not like, like it's the whole thing. It was just also just noise and chaos. But on the other hand, there were shows in like I think it was St. Augustine that were really fun. In Jacksonville were really, really great. The, yeah. One of the way that it all sort of that, like doing stuff with bands, I did stuff with Yola Tango because they would have comics on shows and stuff. But when I started working with this agent who was wonderful and booked me on the Modest Mouse tour and then some other stuff, she, when the Shins were blowing up, so like, I don't know, around 2002 plus or minus, like they had three shows at Bowery and she was like, do you want to open for the Shins? And I was like, yes, I would love to open for the Shins. And, you know, and then I learned like from that experience, like let people know they'll be a comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
So like there's two other bands. And then I think at 11 o'clock or 10 or whatever it was that the, when the Shins were supposed to go on, instead I came out to do 10 minutes of stand up comedy. And it's people going like Shins, Shins, Shins. And then I'm like, hello. And I think I had like also some video because I knew it could be hard. And like nobody really yells at video because they know it can't stop.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There was a point at which like I'm sort of trying to talk or whatever. And then I made some joke of how I can't believe I'm being heckled by people who could get beat up by Belle and Sebastian. And then that kind of like turned and everyone was like, oh, this is, let's give this person 6 minutes of our attention. So then people were kind of nice. So it was like, but yeah, and then I did, you know, various shows and now since then have like done a lot of music comedy things with friends, you know, but also it's, that's at a time where it's like, if there's an opportunity to like reach an audience and like have to figure out how to make it work, you know, it's totally worth it. So like,
yeah,
you know, that's like, if there's a way to like make $200 in a night and pay your rent and maybe it's a little hard, you still, you know, do it and also absolutely reach people and probably, you know, find fans in the end.
Yeah, I did that Yola Tango show one time. I really love those guys. They're so nice. And they have so many friends that are comics and stuff. And I've felt so honored to do it. And at one point I was finishing a joke and I was so shaky about like, I just kind of, I'm sure it came out, but it's like, I didn't believe in myself as a stand-up in New York City. I was like, I just don't have the hard jokes to be doing this. And I think it like showed, but there was one joke that I was doing and it was about a Taco Bell commercial. And the punchline was like, bitches ruin food. And in the second the last word was out of my mouth, this guy in the back goes, and rock shows. And then kind of like booed the guy, which then felt horrible because then it was like, oh, this audience pities me. Like it was that kind of thing where the whole thing turned. And it is absolutely the thing I think of because I'm so furious at myself for not giving it a beat and then going like, and this is of course the comeback I've written hundreds of years later,
which is how
where
it works.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Where I was like, oh, bitches ruin rock shows. Let's not, we better not tell Georgia, the fucking drummer of Yola Tango. But instead I was just like, I can't remember what I did. It was like, that's not the spirit of Hanukkah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That's not thing. And then just, pretty, yeah.
You're ruining the Hanukkah. Holidays.
Yes. Yeah. Those shows were really fun. I mean, they're, you know, they also like, but, they were also a thing where like people knew to expect a surprise band and a surprise comic for those shows. So it was, you know, that was, it was really when you'd be on a show and people are like, well, for the Shins one was like, why is this person not the Shins? And then the Modest Mouse shows, I think I was like, cause nobody would have known me. So I was like, please bill me as comedian Eugene Burbage, just so people know it's comedy. And then I think similarly, I emceed this tour for Cake, the Unlimited Sunshine tour with Cake, Tegan and Sarah and Gogo Bordello. And that I was like, you know, that also like the opening set was great. It was really easy. And then I could do a sort of shorter set after the first band. And then like when it was time for Cake, like, cause I think they were like, and you'll do like a few minutes, but then you would walk out and basically it was, you know, whatever, 3,000 people chanting Cake. And there's no like version where you're like, hold on. I'd love to tell you about a time at a mall that was a little silly. Like nobody wants to hear it. They're just like Cake, Cake, Cake. So like, but then you just, once you do it enough, like with bands, you're just like, here's what will work. I'm happy to do that. If like you want a different thing, like it doesn't, it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure. It's proven out.
And you don't want me to do 45 minutes. Like, you don't really want 45 minutes. You want like 20, 25, maybe broken
max.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never forget watching Tool ask David Cross to open for them. And we were, this was like in, it was in Southern California, but it was outside of LA somewhere. I want to say it was in either Ventura or something. And we all drove out to watch it because we're like, oh yeah, we'll get, you know, Tool tickets or whatever. And then David's performing and he literally got introduced. He walked on stage and everyone just started throwing bottles and bottle caps and shit at him.
Oh no
way.
And
he didn't, he got to the microphone. He tried to fight against it for like 30 seconds and then he just left. It's like Tool's audience doesn't want fucking comedy. And it's Maynard Keenan who was like, I love comedy. Yeah. They'll love comedy. And it's like, it does not work that way at all.
Yes, I think it's like depending. Like I did a tour with Andrew Bird and his audience was incredible. They are like the lovely NPR people. And I did, I think that show was actually probably like half hour opening sets, like, you know, but it was like, you know, a very pleasant show in theaters for, you know, a lovely audience.
Yeah.
But Tool sounds impossible.
Yes, know? No
so
way.
Like, yeah.
But you know what was just as bad as, and I was too new, green and new to stand up to have done well because it was a half hour in front of Celine or Cyndi Lauper. So I always want to call her Celine Dion. but they threw stuff and yelled, get off stage too. And it was Cyndi Lauper. And the woman that asked me to do it got fired because of how badly I did. It was the worst. I cried afterwards. I had trouble getting paid. I was
what
fired.
What
year
was it?
Yeah, what year and how long, how much time were you supposed to do?
This was like 2005, and it was in Houston, Texas, at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater.
No way.
And the girl, I think she worked for Verizon, and she was like, oh, I know a comedian that could open for Chris, or for Cyndi. And I was just not ready. And there was no announcement. People cheered when I walked out thinking it was going to be Cyndi Lauper and it was just a guy and they had just immediately were booing. But I was like, I got to do my 30 minutes of what was then like wordplay and puns.
No.
And someone peeked out and I was fired I never got my free meal. Everything was bad. And
it's
they
never
didn't
too late to write to the Verizon Center.
Well, I thought it was going to be, they said, yeah, and there's a whole tour after that. And my friend, Tommy, was a regular opener for Cher, and he had bought a house from that gig. Granted, he was also a family-friendly, like, magician. He had a lot of plan Bs to go to other than jokes.
Right, but, right. Yes, I once had a... Very early in whatever, I think in the early 2000s, I was almost with some agency and they booked some room in Vegas. So I went to like LA to meet with them and maybe come back and meet, like have another meeting or whatever. And they were like, you could go and do this, you know, off the beaten path Vegas room where you would, I think, just do 10 minute sets or something.
That's cool.
And I was supposed to do 8 shows. I think in the first night I did 2 and it was just such a mismatch where it was like, also it was like an audience of people like on ventilators and, or like respirators, not ventilators. Anyway, like oxygen machines.
Oxygen tanks,
and very like elderly. And this was, oh, you know what it was? This was actually after 9/11 because the guy who headlined killed with like, it was something like 45 minutes of stuff about Bush Gore, but it felt like it was, like November-ish or October, November after 9/11. So it was this weird thing where like the world had changed and it was like, I get doing topical stuff, but it was like not exactly topical, but to that audience, it was quite topical. And I remember saying something about the internet, you know, cause this is what 2001. And then I like meaning the internet, like it was like offhanded, like I signed up for something on the internet. And I could see in the eyes of the audience that they like, they didn't use the internet. Like it was not like I was, like it was like I brought up the telephone before most households had a telephone.
Yeah. And if you're on a ventilator thing, you're never going to learn about the internet.
But it was like, I was like, oh, I can't, I don't have, like, I thought, like, this is broad stuff that will relate. And then I forget, like, the poor MC, like, so the MC trying to help me, like he was genuinely trying to help me. And he was like, do you have any fart jokes or anything about being Jewish? And I was like, I had like one thing, like I didn't, but I tried what I, and it was like, this is not a good match. And then the place was like, you know what? You can stay at the hotel the next 3 days, but why don't you do none of the shows? And I was like, this is great. This is a great deal. I do not need this six more times.
Yeah, you got treated much better than I was. Just locked out of the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater.
Yeah, right. No thanks.
Pushed out by a roadie guy.
Don't come back. Well, yeah. Also, you know, that's funny is that the early days or the old days of the Largo when it was on Fairfax, they used to always try to have comedy openers for music nights. And I would do it all the time because I, like, that was the level that I was at of kind of like hosting and emceeing and stuff. Music audiences at that time did not want, it's like they got trained into accepting comedy going with music. But in the beginning, they didn't like it. Really? And it is a totally different vibe than any kind of a comedy audience. Like when they're there to get sung to and, you know, like see their favorite musician in an intimate setting, they don't want to hear anything out of my mouth for sure. And it'd just be like, I would totally do it for the money and the dinner that you would get. I'd be like, I don't care. Fine. That's I have to pay my phone bill.
Fancy plate of spaghetti.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, but also like as it happened more and more often, people like meaning I now do it with musicians where like it seems like it could be a fun match or it would go well. Or it's like someone I like and we're kind of doing it together, you know?
Totally.
But it's true that like if it's like a ruckus crowd who don't really know there's going to be comedy, it is a little uphill.
It's not great. Also, if you're going out in front of a crowd like that, you have to know you have like the killer material that's going to land matter what.
And
I was the kind of comic that would always be like, I'm gonna try this thing. And it's like, no, dummy. Right. No, get all of your closers and put them all together.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
Front load.
Do 15 minutes of closers basically.
Help yourself. Yes,
yeah. Exactly. And that is like
and fart jokes.
Yeah. Now I can show them so many Bob's episodes. We'll be like, enjoy this fart.
Have.
Here's another fart coming at you, oldie.
One of the great historical farts of all time.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you know, 2 decades later, I have the fart jokes I needed.
You just,
isn't
it takes
that
a while.
The way?
Yeah, exactly. You got to craft them. That some of those fart jokes just need time to be molded.
Eugene, do you still do your podcast?
No. I did it for, I mean, it was really like Audible had, like was like, do you want to do this thing? And they had basically all these stories that they had recorded. And so I would talk to the person and they would, so it was, it was really, really fun. But I think that they were like, we're now doing, like, I think they moved to do like larger long form sort of like almost like radio plays and stuff. And so I forget how many years ago that stopped. But I really enjoyed it, and I would totally do a podcast. Like, I love, like, I did, like, college radio, you know, in college, and I love radio, so podcast is very, like, you know, it's really fun.
Yeah.
So I would totally do something like that again, but don't do it.
Right. I forgot that's how I, because we didn't know each other very well, and that is how I was, they had it recorded from
they
some
already
show
had, yes.
Yeah.
They had recordings, and so I would talk to, you know, interview the people and we would pause it and like go like, wait, like tell me a little more about that.
It's just so funny because they set me up to record in Missoula and the place I recorded was a place where they teach kids how to play guitar. And then they had a little recording area so little kids could. So I was just in a little room with little kid guitars. It's just really an interesting experience. It was pre-Zoom, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to plug? Bob's Burgers movie?
Yeah, the Bob's Burgers movie is coming out. I don't know when this comes out, but the Bob's Burgers movie comes out on May 27th. So either go to it or go right when you hear this.
That might
either go the evening after, or if it's September, go rent it.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're fishing for a day that this will come out, but we just don't know.
I see. This comes out 6/27. So it's
6/20.
The day.
I've done a perfect job promoting. So I hope you saw Bob's Burgers the
one
movie.
Month ago. To
go
the
see
day.
Fletch. Go see Fletch if that's been announced.
Yeah. So
that's check that out.
I'm very excited.
Yeah,
I'm
see both.
So excited.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for doing this with
us. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. Thank you guys so much.
And Eugene, you look good with that beard, I've been meaning to say.
Thank you.
I know that's a visual reference, not good for podcasting, but that's a nice beard.
Thank you.
Eugene has a beard. It goes down to his belt. And
it's
a fascinating
I'm working
thing.
My way into ZZ Top.
Yes, he has a guitar that spins from a belt buckle.
Yes, exactly.
And he's got legs and he knows how to use them. I'm going to stop now. I'm going to stop with the ZZ Top references.
Stop and wrap it up. We're going to finish it.
Thank you for being on, Eugene. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR!
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Casey O'Brien.
Mixed by John Bradley.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.